You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to the Here District. I'm Marcus Johnson, and man, it's been a tough past few days, tough week. Former teammate, close friend, one of the most genuine people that I've ever known in my life, died unexpectedly. Last Tuesday, I think March 11th or so, but Junior Bridgman. And in just kind of honor of his legacy and who he was, I'm privileged to be joined by a couple of our teammates, myself and Junior, a couple of Milwaukee Bucks that played with Junior that have known him for a long, long time. And Dr. Lloyd Walton. Lloyd, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here, man, under tough circumstances.
Yeah. And Paul Pressey. Paul, we thank you also, man, for coming on by to talk about our dear friend.
Pleasure.
And so, you know, let me talk about, you know, we always talk in the context of where were you when you heard the news? I mean, I was on a flight from Milwaukee through Denver to Los Angeles, about to get off the plane. We were in descent. I got a text from you, Lloyd, and you gave me one of those texts where you're like, man, I don't want to tell you on the phone. And it was like, oh boy, now what? So I didn't know. I thought about your mom. I thought, yeah, I just thought all these thoughts started rushing through my head. Like, what is it? And while I was standing at the door, getting ready to get off the plane, a reporter, Dario Melendez from Milwaukee, texted me and asked me, did I have anything to say about the Bridgman situation? And my heart just dropped, guys. It just dropped. And so I got off the plane, walking through the terminal. I had a hard time walking, tears, you know, not just wondering what was going on. I got to my son, Josh, who picked me up, and he told me that he had had a heart attack and that he was at the hospital. He was still alive. I was like, are you sure he's still alive? He's like, I'm pretty sure. So I said, well, let me call Al Washington, a mutual friend of all of ours, of Junior's. And Al was like, no, MJ, he died 10 minutes ago. And just talking about a sad, sad blow. You know, Junior meant so much to each and every one of us. He was one of the most revered ball players for what he had done off the court in terms of business acumen and, you know, Forbes magazine, the Billionaire Club, the Milwaukee Bucks ownership group he joined in September. But I'm going to start with you, Paul. Just give us some reflections on Junior Bridgman and your memories and what he meant to you and things of that nature, man. And again, I appreciate you coming by just sharing some of your thoughts and feelings.
For me, Marcus, you know, and I just want to give a little location where I was. I was in Boston visiting my son, and Harvey Ketchings called me. And he said, Paul, man, I'm hurt. I said, wait a minute now. Should I be standing up or sitting down? He said, are you sitting down yet? I said, no, but tell me anyway. He said, Junior passed this morning. I said, what? I said, Junior Bridgman? He said, are you kidding me? And, you know, I'm all distorted then. And so that hurt me, man. I was dysfunctional for that day. But Junior Bridgman, to me, was just the coolest, the guy that you didn't even know was in the room. But when you look at the game of basketball, you look at the business world, to me, he was the first pioneer to the level of there's another future after basketball. And he put that on the map. Just my wife and I were just talking about how he got started and how funds was put in front or opportunities put in front of him. And I'm quite sure you was there at that time, Marcus. When the cable thing came out, had an opportunity to invest in the cable. And that was before I got there. But anyway, my wife was reading that. She said, I didn't know they made like three times the money in a matter of a year. And blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, that's awesome. So I know that was an opportunity for him to see the business side of it. But one of the biggest things I can appreciate Junior about, not just playing with him because he was an awesome basketball player, but to put the eyesight on a lot of guys to understand that there's life after basketball. And he did it at the highest peak. He touched a lot of lives, changed a lot of lives. And to me, the mentorship, not just Junior, we're talking about him, but you, Marcus, Harvey, Sydney, Bob, Brian, all you guys set the tone. And I think y'all had a family atmosphere, man. And that put me in the right frame of mind of being a true pro. If somebody had a birthday, if somebody had an anniversary, it was a party going on, everybody showed up. Everybody. And that's the kind of environment that Junior, yourself, other people created. And I thank you guys. And Junior was probably one of the biggest guys because he just made everything work because he didn't make no beans or heel about anything. This was his pose right here. You remember this, Marcus. Look.
Oh man. But Lloyd, I know you and Junior, your relationship predates actually. I didn't notice until I read some stuff that you had talked about and heard you talk about your relationship with Junior Brisbane, but you talk about you and Junior's relationship.
Junior and I met when we were in high school. East Chicago. I'm from Chicago. And we were chose to be counselors at Abe Saperstein's basketball camp in Chicago. Okay. Abe Saperstein, as you know, was the founder of the Globetrotters, and his daughter had taken it over. And so they would get, you know, the guys who had great promise, if you will, to be the counselors. And then we'd get a chance to play against each other. And he was going into his senior year, and I was going into my junior year. And the thing that stands out at this point is that the guy that I met plus 50 years ago never changed. And I mean, never changed. I heard Paul talk about he was cool. He was calm. He was collective. And to me, it always seemed like he was, when something came up or something was going on, he would just immediately go to introspective, right? Okay, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? What is this all about? He never just said something, right? Mm-hmm. And then he went on to Louisville, and I went to Marquette. And we played against each other several times. And I remember doing a fireside chat with him. I invited him to Vegas to meet with the players. And I did some research before we got there because I wanted to talk a little smack to him, you know. And I thought we had beat them both times. And we're up on stage, and I'm saying, yeah, man, you know, we used to kick y'all butt. He said, no. Can somebody look it up? So somebody looked it up while we're on stage. Louisville 87, Marquette 79. I was like, wait a minute. So I was looking at the documentary last night, and there are two sequences in the documentary. And I did not realize this, where I passed the ball to Junior and he scores. I just, you know, you both of y'all know, man, I just couldn't hold it back, man, after seeing that. Before that, you know, as a counselor for the players for the last 25 years, always tried to get them the best information and expertise. Mm-hmm. And so I needed somebody to come and talk about business and entrepreneurship on a number of occasions. Mm-hmm. Every single time I called Junior, he showed up. Mm-hmm. Never questioned about it, just where you want me to be. And he would show up and share with the players his journey and the things that he thought that they need to be aware of as they move forward to make that transition. Mm-hmm. I'm so blessed, honestly, to have known him for this long.
Yeah.
Last thing I'll say is that when he called me one day and he said, hey, man, I want to invite you and your wife to the Kentucky Derby. I'm having a weekend. And I'm like, really? He said, yeah, absolutely. And my wife and I were elated. You know, we drove 3.5 hours and he gave us a room free. Right. They sent a limousine to pick us up. And we step out of the limousine and there's somebody saying, I'm your guide. Mr. Brisbane, say I'm your guide for the day. I'm like, what is going on? So it was an unbelievable day. I'll never, ever forget it. And I hope people know. This last thing I'll say is I hope people know and realize that more than anything to me, he always gave more than he took.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Without mm-hmm. question. You know, we talk about your Marquette and Louisville days. I actually played against Junior in the Final Four in 1975, John Wooden's last championship. We beat him in overtime. And I think he had about 15 rebounds. It was just, you know, super athletic coming off that high post screen on the UCLA cut for lobs. But Lloyd, you remember this, man. And so first, Junior as a player, just incredible bounce, as they would call it nowadays. This guy could jump out the gym, probably 40-plus-inch vert. And, Paul, we're playing down in Atlanta, my rookie year, 1977. We're down 29 points. I looked it up in the fourth quarter. Wow. Me and Lloyd on the bench. And Alex English and Junior, other guys on the floor. We're down 29. 8 minutes and 30 seconds left in that game. And then the Hawk fans, Lloyd, me and you sit next to each other. They're talking trash. Y'all are trash. Y'all ain't this. Y'all ain't that. And, we got to take it. We're down 29. What can we say? All of a sudden, Junior gets on a heater. And whatever it was, we were down at that point. He wound up knocking down like 7 straight jumpers. He just couldn't miss. And you know how Junior that little dip would go to the crowd when he had that lip thing going, but he hit like seven in a row. I looked it up, had 16 points in that fourth quarter, man. Lloyd, you hit a jumper with 29 seconds left to play to tie the game up. I got fouled. We had 3 to make 2. I missed the first one, made the next 2 to help us win the game. But man, it's one of the most incredible shooting exhibitions, Paul, that I've ever seen in my life, but that was Junior. And if they would have had the sixth man of the year back in those days, he would have won it multiple times. And as a matter of fact, let me just say this right now. I think in terms of contributing to the game, what he did on the court, coming off the bench, specialty role, like few have played before, we've got Michael Cooper in the Hall of Fame. We got Bobby Jones in the Hall of Fame. I really believe Junior Bridgman, without question, hands down, because of everything. Mm-hmm. Everything that he's meant to the game belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh. I second that.
I third it. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, and Paul, Dan, you and Junior used to go at each other. We all did, you know, at our position. But what's your memories of Junior as a player? Just
the only thing, the biggest thing I knew when I first came to Milwaukee was, first of all, how do I get on the floor? It's Marcus Johnson. It's Sidney Moncrief. It's Junior Bridgman. It's Brian. All these guys, Mickey Johnson. These guys got experience in there. I'm looking because I played the 1, 2, 3, and sometimes the 4. But in college, I played the 1, 2, and 3 for sure. So I'm like, now, that spot's taken. The bench spot's taken. So how do I get in here? But anyway, when they start talking about small ball, we was a small ball team. Sometimes Marcus played the 5.
Yep.
And we rolling, okay? And we could double the post and rotate everybody because we was all the same size. That was probably the most exciting basketball I've ever played in my life because Junior, Sid, Marcus, all of them increased my assist rate because I knew I could break somebody down and draw and kick. And to me, you could not leave Junior. When they started talking about spacing the floor, Junior could stand right there on that wing and his guy was still in his face. And so he created that kind of space 24/7, and he could make shots, especially when you need them. Like you said, Marcus, I didn't know he had that kind of like 7 in a row, but I remember a time when Junior had cold spells, and Nelly would say, "Hey, JB, keep shooting." And when you're a shooter, and the coach tells you that, and sooner or later, you're going to come out of it. And that's the one thing Junior had. He had the confidence. He never wavered one way or the other. And I want to second and third it. What Lloyd just said, the most kindest man you want to ever meet. And he definitely gave more than what he took. And people don't know that. Most people don't know that. They just know him as a franchise owner, a basketball player. But the impact on society and what he has done, you can't even measure it. And I thank him for that. I thank him for being who he is and never changed, as Lord said. And I just thankful and blessed to be a part of it.
Man, you're right, Paul. And he was so unassuming. And, you know, to have the accomplishments and success.
Yes.
And I remember as I was talking about the Kentucky Derby, the night before the Derby, he had given this party. I mean, you know, Usher was the main event, right? So my wife and I, so we walk up the stairs to go to the event, and who's standing with all these people all over coming and going? Who's standing in the middle of the floor and nobody's even stopping or saying anything to him? He's just standing there. It was Junior.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife had never met him. I said, "Honey, there he is right there." She says, "Where?" Because she was looking for somebody to have a crowd around him, right?
Right,
you know,
right.
Just wanted to Nobody. He was just on Zoom. Hey, man, what took you so long? Hey, this your wife? Oh, you gave him a chance, huh? Just like he had met her, you know, years ago, man. It was unbelievable, man. And those are the kind of memories, man, that will stick with me for the rest of my life. I am so fortunate, seriously, to know somebody like that for 50 plus years and never change.
Yeah.
I just want to add this because, you know, it's a memory for me. I talked to JB probably 2.5 weeks ago, just before all this happened, right? And he called me about, hey, Paul, I just want to check and see, you know, do you know some GMs in the league and this and that? And we just talked some basketball. And I said, yeah, I know a few. But he said, well, if you know a few, drop a few names for me, so on. I said, okay. I said, well, by the way, I'm going to be in Milwaukee at the end of the month. Are you going to be there? He said, oh, yeah. He said, you coming? I said, yeah, I'll be there. And all right, I'll see you there. And about a week and a half later, this happens. And it changed my whole thought process of losing and missing somebody. And Marcus and I talked about this. When it happened, I think it was a day he had passed, or maybe that night. And I called Marcus. Marcus looked at the phone. He said, do I want to pick this? And so he picked it up. By the grace of God, he picked it up. He didn't know the Spirit was all on him, but he picked it up. He said, what's up, Paul? And I didn't call him to talk about Junior per se. I called him to let him know the impact that Junior had on all of us, and not only him and me, but the whole team. And I wanted to thank him and the rest of the team, because what we're going to miss about Junior Bridgman is the impact that he has on the social world and the whole business world. How he going to change? He changed that because he get, yeah. for example, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Jamal Mashburn is a big time business guy, entrepreneur, owned dealerships, restaurants, etc. And I know he's talked with him some. I know he dealt with Shaq. So when you started thinking about all, he's already helped change the business world. And so I was telling Marcus, I said, the reason why I call you is what Junior had put in my mind to say, we've been in that basketball arena all of our lives, and now it's time for us to get closer to our families, to get closer to our children, to get closer to our grandkids, because we have given those opportunities, and not that it was wrong, but I'm in Milwaukee, I'm in the community, you're doing this, you're doing that charity thing, you're doing it. It's telling me we got more time behind us than we do have in front of us. So we need to get moving and seeing our kids, our grandkids, our mothers, our brothers, our sisters. That's the thing, Mr. Bridgman, God bless him, rest in peace, put a heavy heart on me.
Yeah, and to that point, so here's one of my stories. And so I was asked to string together two or three sentences talking about what Junior Bridgman meant to me. And I knew everybody would talk basically kind of similar things about just what we're talking about now. So I wanted to make it personal. And so I recounted an experience this summer. My daughter Shiloh was in Louisville, of all places, with her AAU team. And so a good buddy of ours, Al Washington, said, yeah, you ought to call JB and see if you can stay at the estate. I was like, he's like, no, you know, that's what it's there for. So I reached out to Junior. I'm going to be in Louisville these days. Is it cool if I, sure. So I had it laid out. Gave me the big bedroom in this huge estate that was a converted barn. It's a state 70 acres, 4 or 5 different houses for the kids and relatives. They don't live there. Junior and Doris don't live there, but the kids do. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I'm staying there taking, you know, so he comes to pick me up from the airport, guys. And my flight got in early. And so I text him, let him know that I was coming in early. Okay, I'll meet you there. We got stuck on the tarmac for about an hour. And I kept, because there was no gate available or something. So I kept texting him, man, go home. I'll take a Uber. I'll take a Lyft. I'll wait. I just need to know if I need to park. So he parked. So anyway, so he, you know, I get into the blue Bentley SUV, which I've never been into ever in my life. This is what he's rolling, picking me up in all, you know, not flossing, but just casual, that's just who he is, blue Bentley SUV. But my point is, during that trip, he took me to every game that Shiloh played over a 3-day period. He watched at least, you know, 4 or 5 of her games. This is like 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, you know, playing AAU basketball in a gym full of people, big convention center type gym. He had a special dinner party for her at his mansion, at his estate. His chef hooked it up, man. Prime sirloin. What is she like, him? She'll stay prime sirloin and crab and lobster and everything. 20 people of his friends, relatives, Eden Bridgman, some other people were there. And they made a special a tribute to her during that dinner. This is for Shiloh. You're part of the family, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Arranged for her team to eat at Mussels and Burgers, a restaurant near their hotel. He's like, oh, they're close to my I'm part owner in Mussels and Burgers. They want a team meal there? I'm like, all right, let me check. And he hooked that up. And this is just, you know, this is just what Junior Bridgman, this is the kind of stuff Junior Bridgman does. And here's the other thing. I never asked Junior ever for one red cent. I don't know how many, you know, guys have done that. That's none of my business. I could care less. But the point is this. When I would bring business ideas to him, you know, sometimes off the wall type stuff, I want to get into the video gaming business. He would like, well, Em, I don't know anything about that, but I've got attorneys who do. You can have complete access to my attorneys. I'm like, Junior, how much do your attorneys cost, man? No, they're on retainer. You know, I got to pay them anyway, so they might as well be doing something, you know, and I would have complete free liberal access to these high powered attorneys who would walk me through step by step of the pitfalls and the dangers of whatever the business opportunities it was. It happened a couple of times, not a lot, but that's just, man, that's, you know, just so remarkable. Our families spent time together during the course of the year, staying in each other's homes and all that good stuff, man. And you know, that's just, when I think of Junior, I think of just someone who's kind of being of service was one of the things that he was to us.
Yes.
And the final point, and Lloyd, I'll let you follow up on this. The closeness that we had as a team with the Milwaukee Bucks. Junior lived in Glendale. I lived in Glendale. Sidney Moncrief lived in Glendale. Paul, I don't know where you and Liz live, but we were, Harvey Ketch, Fox Point. We were all within 5 minutes from each other. Alex English lived off of Good Hope Road and Green Bay or whatever in the apartment complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just that kind of
lived at Brown Deer.
It was that kind of closeness that we all had, man, with those early Milwaukee Buck days in the '70s and eighties. Sidney mentioned this, Paul. He said that once that trade was made for Terry Cummings and Craig Hodges and Ricky Pierce and Junior, myself, Harvey Ketchum, went to the Clippers. Mm-hmm. He told me that the Milwaukee Bucks were never the same after that. I was like, well, what do you mean? Terry Cummings is a hell of a player. He's like, yeah, he's a hell of a player. But in terms of that chemistry, that camaraderie that we had as a team, that family atmosphere that we had as a team, he said it was never, ever the same after that. And that's, you know, Junior being a big part of all that.
Yep.
You know, I was thinking about what you said, Paul, about how he changed basketball. So Chauncey Billups tells a story. I don't know if you guys have heard Chauncey talk about Junior. So, you know, at one point in time, because Junior's name was ringing, he had players calling him, teach me, show me, right? And so initially he started out with saying, all right, come down for 4 or 5 days. You know, we're going to take you through everything, right? And so guys would get there and stay a day, and the next day they have a meeting, and these guys are gone. He said, I can't do that, man. I'm bringing in my people who are experts, et cetera, et cetera. So he said, before I do anything special for a guy, what I'm going to do is make sure the guy proves that he wants to be in this business. So the next person up was Chauncey. So he mentored Chauncey, I want to say, for 2.5 years. Wow. And everybody thought, when he said working with Junior, he was just going to give him some stores. He said, no. I'm going to make sure you really want it and you know what you're doing. And the funny thing about it, I think the first store he gave him, Chauncey was so excited about it. I think it was in St. Louis, if I'm not mistaken. So he gets down and Chauncey says, well, I just want to experience everything, right? So he goes into the back and he starts flipping fries and burgers and stuff like that. And he said, well, now I want to go to the window, man. Let me go to the window. So he's in the window. And a guy comes in and looks to give him a double take. He says, "Are you Chauncey?" He says, "Yeah, I'm Chauncey." "Oh, man, what happened to you, man?" "Oh, brother, I own
this. It's me." Yes.
"It's me." So he was that kind of guy. So to your point, though, Paul, as I stated, man, he did so much with so many people, and he changed it. A lot of players today think about becoming entrepreneurs, right, and businessmen, right, because of what Junior was able to do,
yes,
right? And
yes,
I hope these guys that he's helped,
yes,
I hope they continue to pay it forward with other guys, right?
Absolutely.
We can take away this, this stigma about players losing all their money and don't want to do anything but play basketball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of my stories with Wendy's, mm-hmm, when they, mm-hmm, came to him with that offer, and Junior came to me, said, "Man, you want to go in with me on this Wendy's? We're going to get started." And I'm like, "Man, ain't nobody going to eat no square hamburgers, bro. You're about to lose all your money." But the point is this. He didn't make money right away. He lost money. He and Paul Silas. So God knew what he was doing. If I would have lost a whole bunch of money, you know what I mean? Me and Junior may not have been friends toward the end. But he lost money on the first few stores, and that's when he decided, which he recommended to Chauncey Billups, that great story you told, Lloyd. He decided to go in and get hands on, start, you know, flipping burgers and getting over the fry thing and doing, mm-hmm, with the greasy fries and doing the thing with the fries and all that. And same thing happened to him. Someone passed by and called into a radio show that Junior said he was listening to. And the lady called in and said, "I just saw the most saddest thing in the world. I saw Junior Bridgman working at a Wendy's." And said, "Oh, my God." And I think the radio host had to tell her, like, "Oh, ma'am, that's one of the many Wendy's franchises that he owns." But in terms of mentorship, this thought just occurred to me. I mean, it's funny how, standing on the shoulders, Wayne Embry, owned that McDonald's across the street. Mm-hmm. He was a mentor to Junior. Yep. Yep. Junior's become a, yep, mentor to so many players, yes, who've been successful in the business world. And as you talked about, Lloyd, that's what it's all about, man. Just erasing that stigma of the black athlete winding up bankrupt and destitute and just forlorn and just those sad sob stories. And Junior has changed that narrative, man. He has changed that narrative almost single-handedly in the 80s. Doesn't seem like that long ago to me, we're talking 40, almost 50 years ago. He has changed that narrative.
Like today, players got starter kits now. They got started. They're making $150 million. You could drop $5 or $6, $10 million. Yeah. And you still good.
Yeah.
Whereas Junior, as you were saying, when he started out, he lost some money.
Right.
That's what motivated him to say, "This is okay. Let me find ground up." When he started going there flipping burgers and waiting on people, he wanted to find out how the money's coming in, how the money's going out, how do you adjust to make things better. By doing that, that's hand-on. And I think because I've talked to him several times about it, and, you know, he'll say, "Paul, I just kind of started from the bottom." And I was like, but to your point, Marcus, that makes the difference. I'm in here for the long haul, and he was never a quitter. And so when he put his foot in, he's going to be in all the way. But go ahead, Lloyd. I'm sorry.
No, that's cool. I was just thinking about Garvey talking about him and Paul and their first deal. You know, I'll say this before I tell the story. You know, everybody wants your success, but they don't want your grind.
Right.
Success. Think about the Burger King that they started. Was Burger King or what? I think it was Burger King. Him and Paul bought in New Jersey. And he said, "Man, the first month, everything knew that we had two former players. Players were playing that owned this place. And so people were coming. We hired this guy, and we didn't realize he knew less than we did. Things started to fade, right? They weren't making any money." And he said, up comes February 14th, Valentine's Day. And two guys, just like the movie, tries to rob the place. Mm. They can't get the safe out. So they set it on fire. And Julie says, "The best fire he ever saw was that fire up in place." Because it got him out of the deal, and that's when he started figuring out, "I need to learn more about this."
Right.
Yeah, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah, man. Chris, you got something?
No, just listening to you brothers reflect, and it just, it's one of those things, man, where when Junior passed, it really hit me like 24 hours later, and it just kind of was a deep depression of understanding the type of man that we lost. And we can't, you know, it's about inspiration. It's about motivation. It's about using Junior's lessons and how he lived his life to teach the next generation, for me to teach my kids, for them to teach their kids of how to live, how to treat people, how to work hard, how to be humble, most of all. Mm-hmm. That's what resonated with me the most.
To that end, with his businesses and Lloyd, you know, Paul, he shared with us just kind of philosophies that he had. It was all about customer services. Customer service, making sure the customer's happy, get out there and understand what they want, how they want it, you know, the attitude or lack thereof that you have as someone. I mean, people are doing you a favor by coming into your restaurant, spending money with you. So you've got to show that appreciation in terms of how you treat them. And that's a great lesson for life. You know what I mean? Just showing appreciation. Because people don't have to.
Gratitude.
People don't have to mess with you on any certain kind of a level. But the fact that they do, you know, is something to be thankful for. So
why do I come to Wendy's when I got McDonald's right beside me? What you got more different than what they got? They got burgers too.
To your point,
service.
Yeah. You know, Garvin, you started this off. Let me just say, you started this off asking, you know, like, where were you? And you shared where you were. I sent you the text.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing I have about my kids and everybody, don't send me a text of bad news.
Right.
Always call me, right? So I'm sitting in my office like at home while I'm sitting now and I get a text. But I said, I'm getting ready to go to the gym. I'm not going to answer no text or anything now. So I get in my car and then my phone rings. And it's a past girlfriend who knows Junior's family very well. And she says, I got some bad news. Now, it's really crazy. And Garvey, you remember my friend Tony?
Yes.
She's the same one called me about Tony. So anyway, she said, what's the bad news? Because I'm like, okay, you know, what are you talking about? This is Lorraine. So she says, Junior passed. And I'm like, you know, things that hit you like a ton of bricks, because people at our age now or in our group are starting to pass away, I never know how much I care about somebody until something like that happens. It took everything away from me.
For
the next hour, I sat in my garage because I just couldn't. I didn't know what to do. I don't know how to do it, right? But since then, I've just what we talked about. There's some things I could do just different as a person if I look at the way Junior lived his life, and that's my commitment to his legacy because he meant so much to so many, and that's what I'm gonna try to do, man.
Yeah. And so we can't leave here without at least mentioning the impact that he had on player revenues today. Mm. You know, and that was the thing about the Bucks. Junior used to always, Lloyd, try and get me to, you know, you ought to be a player rep. I was like, we got Bob as the president, you as the vice president, Steve Mix as the secretary, Quinn as the treasurer. It's like, everybody on our team almost. is in union leadership, but he would keep us abreast of what was going on. He was the plaintiff in the 1987 court case, Bridgman versus the National Basketball Association, dealing with salary caps and the draft and everything else, antitrust type issues that led to them coming up with the 52% of the gross and that whole thing. But he would keep us informed, you know, what was going on, why it was going on. And I had every confidence in he and our leadership, man, that they were going to make the right decisions, get the right things done. But it was Junior's just persistence, man, in that matter that has led to, you don't think about the nexus, the tie-in to today's players and their percentage of the gross revenues that they're able to share in. It was done because of guys like Junior Bridgman, Bob Lanier in the mid-80s, man, going to the mat. You know, going to the mat for us.
Regarding Junior and his involvement in kind of the landmark, you know, changing of the guard for the players in the NBA, how important was that for you guys at that moment during that time
period? Well, it was a major importance because that was during a time period when playoff games were shown on tape delay on CBS at 11:30. They weren't shown live. People can't believe that when I tell them. They weren't shown live. They were shown on because they didn't want to interrupt primetime programming because nobody wanted to see a bunch of, you know, black dudes addicted to cocaine out there running up and down the floor. That was the perception. And, you know, right. And let me say this, you know, for the record, Junior was the most anti-drug. And I never seen Junior take a drink. I never seen him do anything. Anything, you know, me and Lloyd can attest to that, because we was in the mix. But Junior, but Junior.
Hey, I trust y'all.
But I was thinking about this, Lloyd. Junior never ever was judgmental. I remember when I was having my issues with drug abuse, and the Bucks were trying to get me to go to treatment, and all this stuff was going on. I told Junior he wanted to spring into action, tell the Players Association, file a suit. Dude, we can do this, we can do that. And I just like, like, I'm guilty, man. Nah, man. We'll fight this, man. We can't have them, you know, casting those accusations. It's like, well, it's a little more than an accusation, JB. Let me go ahead. I'll deal with this on my own. But the point is, Chris, is that I mean, the image of the league, the perception of the league during that time, Junior and guys like him, Bob and the other guys in the Players Association, man, really went to battle for what they felt like the owners were holding back. So it caused them to have to open up their books. Now we got, you know, 50, 51% of the gross kind of goes to the players, as it should be. The owners could split up their pie but what was left over, but the players should, you know. So salary cap was put in, and you had to pay minimum amounts of money to teams, had to invest minimum amounts of money in player salaries. So that bumped everybody's salaries up. And that's why the million-dollar player, Moses Malone, I think may have been the first one in the 80s. Now all of a sudden, I'm thinking, Lloyd, after about $2 million, Ralph Sampson, it can't get much higher. You know, it, $2 million a year to play basketball. And, you know, it can't get much better than that. And then you fast forward to the current status and what we've got guys now, 60, 70, 80, 90 million or whatever it is that they're making per year. And it started with Junior Bridgman, the Players Association, going to battle to get what they thought was what we deserved as players in terms of what we were putting into this product. You know, the blood, sweat, tears, hard work that we were putting in, that we should be, you know, remunerated because of that.
Absolutely. And I think about this on the other side of that is I went to Junior several times about the vacancy of the executive director of the NBA Players Association. And I really, really felt like I needed to, you know, get some good advice. And he was like so honest with me. We talked for several hours. He was like, you need to pursue it. It's as simple as that, man. You have all the credentials. Yeah. You know, you've been an executive, you know, at several different places. You've been at the, you know, Players Association a number of years. It was all positive, man. You know, I didn't get the opportunity, but I'll never forget it, man. Honestly, it wasn't like, you know, well, I don't think you can do this. You got to be this and that. He was really up for the things I have done as opposed to what I hadn't done. And it was very few things in terms of that position. But I agree with you 100%, Garvey, because of the effort that, you know, Bob Jr. put forth, players are making unbelievable. But it had to start somewhere. And they started that.
Yeah. And players today need to, if nothing else, you know, recognize that contribution. You know, in terms of where, you know, the minimum salaries where they are today, it may be what, 4, 5, 6 million in terms of the average salary of players, is just, you know, jumped up to an astronomically, exponentially increased level because of what guys like Junior Bridgman did for the Players Union and the player as a player representative. Chris, you got some?
No, just the last thing on that. I think it's amazing that Junior, with his status in the league, that he would put his name. He was a plaintiff on that court case, on the class action suit. Right. While he's playing in the NBA, it's not, you know, it's similar kind of in a way to Edel Benin, but Edel Benin had already been done playing. Like, Junior's literally in the league. His name is on a lawsuit suing. That just talks about his courage and what he was really about as a man, standing up so that his brethren, you know, can receive all the benefits as well. He could sacrifice himself.
And here's another point. And so the big name plaintiff in a big time suit before Junior in 1987 was Oscar Robertson. The big O. But Oscar Robertson, you know, Mr. Triple Double, first team All Pro, All Star multiple years. You know, they want guys that are untouchable by the league, that have that kind of leverage in terms of who they are, their position in the league. Junior wasn't an All Star. You know, no triple double, you know, was a really great basketball player, great, great role player off the bench doing what he did. But the fact, I think, of who he was and what he represented as solid of a human being as is out there, You know, you ain't gonna find nothing on him that's going to jeopardize this lawsuit or you know what I mean? The league is not gonna have any leverage on Junior Bridgman because of how he's comporting himself away from all this stuff. He's living a double life. He's doing things that they can bring up, you know, cause you know, when you're dealing with that kind of money, they're gonna turn over every table they can to try and find what they can. But Junior was above reproach. He was above reproach when it came to that kind of stuff. And that's another testament.
Yeah, with all the money that was involved, they put investigators, and I'm not speaking facts, but I know much money involved, they put investigators 100%. Out there to do a search, to find out.
Yeah.
Can we do something about this guy? Does he have some kind of record, right, this image that we could bring up so we can knock this down? And they couldn't do it. Yeah. They couldn't do it, man.
Yeah. So anyway, man, look, Lord, we appreciate you and Paul Pressey coming by today, man. And, you know, this is really – I didn't look forward to this day. I really wanted to pay homage to Junior Bridgman and his legacy and what he meant, but it's a definite level of sadness still with me. You know, when I think about it's funny, Lloyd. I sent Junior a gospel song by Walter Hawkins called "What Is This?" because it's one of my favorites. I sent it to Junior, so Junior told me that it was a song coincidentally that his father used to sing in church when he was a little boy, I bet you had them church women screaming, he would tear a church up. And so, you know, and I get sad, but also get some joy because I believe in the afterlife. And I think about Junior and his father, maybe singing that song up and on the celestial realm and singing that, "What Is This?" And I listen to it almost daily now and think about Junior and his dad being reunited, his mom, all the people that have preceded him, man. And so that gives me, you know, a little bit of solace just thinking about it in those spiritual terms. But I'm so glad that we had a chance to get together, Lloyd. You and Paul Pressey joining us on this first episode in year two of the Here District to talk about Junior, to explain to people what he meant to us, more than just a teammate, more than just a business billionaire, but as a person, Lloyd. You talked about it, his humility. His service, all those things, man, were things that he represented.
He was second to none, man. Yeah. He was second to none. And I mean, there are a lot of great people that I know and that I hear about. But this one I know was a great person.
Yes.
And I ain't talking about just, you know, sports. It's how he treated everybody that I've ever seen him around. Okay. And I'm not like that. Okay. I look at him as an example. I only can imagine what his two boys are like. And I had a chance to meet him at the Kentucky Derby, but I don't have a relationship with them. But everybody that's been around Junior, I can remember him walking into the locker rooms that I invited him to. And he would say hello to the damn equipment manager. Next thing you know, he's over in the corner having a conversation with a guy he'd never met before, right? A regular guy, a millionaire. And I remember this guy, he said to me one day, I said, "Man, how you going to get to the meeting, man? What kind of airlines do you want to get on?" He says, "I'll just take my plane."
His private jet, yes, indeed. Yeah.
I'll just take my plane. I'm like, oh my God. Okay, thank you so much, man. So yeah, this for me, Garvey, I'll tell you, I feel a little better.
Yeah.
I feel a little better being able to. There's a little bit of catharsis in this, being able to share how I feel and what's happened, man. I appreciate you and Chris inviting me on.
Yeah, appreciate you showing up, man. All right, man. Thank you so much, Junior Bridgman. One of a kind. What a legacy he has left. And, man, he's missed every single day. So we love him and pray for the family to get through these difficult times. And that Milwaukee Buck ownership. And that's the last point. I mean, so some people have made comments about, wow, what a travesty. I mean, he dies and just became an owner. But, you know, God has a way of working this stuff out. And this is kind of how it was supposed to happen in my mind. He had tried to be an NBA owner for a number of years. Perfect situations never kind of materialized. He was vacillating this whole summer about this Bucks ownership position. They'd made him an offer he couldn't refuse, a sweetheart of a deal. The valuation of the team, they amped it up or whatever so he wouldn't lose any money. Mm-hmm. And I just think the fact that this kind of put the final cherry on top of who he was, coming full circle. You know what I mean? The team that he started out with, now he buys into an ownership stake, is hands-on, is proactive, and it's just fitting that's been added to his considerable resume. You know, this guy the legacy. This has been added to the legacy. So, yeah, that's it, man. All right, Lloyd, man. Appreciate you stopping by, man, here at District. And I'll see you when I see you, brother. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Love you, man. Thank you.
Love you too, bro. Take care, Chris.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.